Welcome back to the Bus Bot Scottish Football Podcast, back for another week and a very interesting podcast lined up today. I'll introduce the two panel members that I've got in a wee second, but just to let you know that later on in the show we'll be joined by Martin Ross, who's the Global News Editor at Sport Business. He's going to give us a really interesting insight into the current state of Scottish football in terms of broadcasters, where we are with, you know, overseas sales, that kind of thing, and whether we could be doing more. So that'll be coming at the end of the show. Lots and lots to get excited about and chat about before then with Callum Fisher.
Hi Hamish, how you doing? I'm putting in quite a consistent run of form on these podcasts at the moment, so delighted
how,
to be
how
back
many,
in.
How many in a row?
I think that might be three, or this might be my third in a row, something like that. Getting there.
Very good. Callum Scott, you're in a good few if you count your kind of 10-minute appearances.
Yep, no, absolutely. As I said, when work commitments get involved, I still like to try and, you know, poison everybody's earlugs with Kilmarnock propaganda. So anytime I can, I'll still send in a wee voice clip with yourself.
Yes, no, it's really appreciated, and so is anyone who's managed to listen to the podcast over, you know, the pre-season period and obviously the start of the season now. We're coming from a bit of a small base at the moment, but we're gradually growing per podcast, and we really appreciate anyone who's taking the time to listen to any show. So thanks very much from all of us. Right, guys, we'll get through some talking points, then we're going to move on and just briefly talk about the weekend games, and then, as I say, we're going to speak to Martin later on. First talking point, the big one yesterday that came out of Ibrox, well, two big ones really, Fisher. You've signed Cedric Itten from St Gallen in Switzerland, and you've also signed Kemar Roof from Anderlecht for a reported combined £6 million. Good signings?
Yeah, I'm liking what I'm seeing. Kemar Roof was linked last summer, and I think maybe even the summer before that, he's been a kind of permanent transfer rumour since Gerrard's come in. So happy with him. From obviously, I've seen more of him than I have of Cedric Itten. But Kemar Roof was obviously a very good player for Leeds. I think he struggled a wee bit, obviously moving to Belgium and Anderlecht last season, from what I can gather and what I've kind of read up on. But he looks like a very exciting player and a kind of, going forward, a bit of a utility player. I think he can play up front as well as kind of behind the striker across that kind of three, if you like, you know, number 10 left, and I think primarily on the right-hand side. So, yeah, happy to get him in. And then obviously Cedric Itten, I think, had a bit of a breakthrough year last season at St Gallen, get 19 goals in 34 games. And he's got 3 goals in 2 games for Switzerland as well. So obviously the exciting signings, I think it's always exciting when you're signing attacking players. I mean, defenders are obviously pivotal, but I think it's a wee bit more exciting when you're signing attacking players, because then you can start thinking about how they fit into the system and you know, how the team's going to kind of line up, and, you know, obviously just thinking about their first goals for the club and stuff like that. So from what I can gather on these players, and obviously YouTube clips could probably make me look good, but certainly from what I've seen, two really good signings, and probably points to the fact that we'll be losing our Colombian up top fairly shortly. But just it's always exciting when you sign one player, but signing two in one day was really good. So pleased with it so far.
Yeah, we'll come on to Morelos and what the deals mean for him. Just interesting to note that St Gallen, who obviously Rangers have signed Itten from, are reportedly very close to bringing in Flo Cambéry as his replacement. So it's funny how the world of Scottish and Swiss football has worked. Good signings, I think, for Rangers. KC, would you be worried at all about the fact that Kemar Roof hasn't played in 2020 yet?
It's one of those, it is a tough one to, you know, put your finger on with that. But I think, to be fair to Roof, I think that he was carrying an ankle injury for the minute he signed for Anderlecht, and he kind of carried that throughout. Therefore, he had a wee bit of a kind of frustrating time over there. But I don't know, I think that if, depending on the boys obviously fully fit in that, I think that he can do the business here. He's proved that he can do it in the Championship and the lower leagues of England, so I don't see why he can't do it at Rangers. As Fisher said, he seems to be a pretty versatile player, which kind of ticks a lot of the boxes. for somebody, I know like 5'10" isn't particularly, you wouldn't say that's tiny, but it's not exactly big either, but apparently he's very, very good in the air as well, and I think a lot of his goals come for, well, he's good in the air and gets in the crosses as well as obviously been good with both feet and stuff. So, no, obviously it's a slight concern that, as I said, that he's not played in 2020, but realistically you're only maybe talking about 2 months there or whatever, given obviously the kind of COVID outbreak and stuff. So I think if it comes to Rangers fully fit, I think that he could be a very good bit of business.
Let's briefly talk about Morelos then. Fisher, do you think that's him pretty much confirmed to be leaving the club this summer?
Yeah, I mean, I was fairly certain when we discussed it last week regarding the kind of Leo move that he would be away. And I know Gerrard's kind of came out in the press conference today and said he's still here and he's focused. But, you know, Gerrard's not exactly going to come out and say, ah, well, you know, he's thinking about leaving. But I wouldn't be surprised if he plays tomorrow night. And then that's maybe it for him. I just don't see any way he stays now. I mean, we've still got quite a significant chunk of the transfer window to go. I mean, the French transfer window, if we're just talking about Lille, hasn't even opened yet. It's the 15th of August. So, I'm fairly certain he'll be away. And I mean, for us to spend, obviously, potentially $6 million, and then you factor in the fact that we paid just over, I think, three and a half for Hadji as well. You know, we have already spent significant money and from a Rangers perspective in this transfer window, so it'd be interesting to see if we get 15 million upwards, you know, where else we go in the transfer market. But yeah, if Alfie wants to score a hat-trick tomorrow to put us through and then say his goodbyes, then I think I can live with that.
What do we think about tomorrow then, Bayer Leverkusen versus Rangers? If you can cast your minds all the way back to before coronavirus was really a thing in our minds, and I think it was actually just emerging at that stage in Scotland, and, you know, Leverkusen won 3-1 at Ibrox, pretty comfortable that night. Many would expect them to win equally as comfortably on Thursday. However, they haven't played since the DFB Pokal final, which they lost to Bayern Munich. That was on the 4th of July, so that's, what, over a month ago. And they, as I say, they haven't played a single match, competitive or friendly, in that time. It's a kind of interesting preparation for them. I'm surprised they maybe haven't played a match prior to this. Is there a feeling there, Fisher, that they may be taking this a little bit too easy and they may think the tie's already in the bag?
I don't know about that, but I mean, I think we probably discussed it in the pub about a week or so ago. I think Rangers can definitely go there and win the game. Don't know about going through. I mean, it's a tall order, but I certainly think we can win the game. I know Bayer have got a few injuries. Obviously, one of their players is obviously, unfortunately, I think, been tested positive for coronavirus. I know Bellarabi's out, Paulinho's out, and there's, I think, one or two others as well. And then, obviously, there's been the talk for the last couple of weeks about Havertz going to Chelsea, which I think all Rangers supporters kind of hoped would have been done and dusted by now, so he couldn't play. But I certainly think the opportunity's there. I mean, I think Rangers have shown in Europe throughout Gerrard's tenure that we can compete with anybody. Bayer Leverkusen was probably the only game, I think, since Gerrard came in, that there was a proper golfing quality. And obviously Leverkusen are a fantastic team. Enjoyed watching them in the Bundesliga last season. So it is a tall order, but I definitely think we can go there and at least win the game. I don't know if Leverkusen will be taking it easy, but obviously with injuries, and then, as you've just mentioned, the fact that they haven't played a competitive game for a number of weeks, I'm kind of hoping that they're maybe a wee bit sluggish out the blocks and we can take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think the first 20 minutes is going to be crucial, and if Rangers can get an early goal, then, you know, it's going to be interesting, and stating the obvious, but there's no fans inside the stadium tomorrow night, so it's not as if Rangers will have to put up with a hostile home support. So yeah, looking forward to that one. Is that a 5 to 6 kickoff, something like that?
Yeah, 5 to 6 kickoff. It's actually a bit bittersweet because I've still got the tickets for this game in the drawer beside me. Which was a bit sad. I was saying to my mate today, we should have been in there. But 5 to 6 kickoff, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. Bit of Scottish teams playing in last season, which is going to be a bit of a strange feeling. Very much in this season, when we heard earlier on that Aberdeen, in terms of the city, not the football team, is going back into what they're calling a local lockdown, effectively going back into lockdown. Obviously, that's more a news story rather than sport or football. But when it comes to Scottish football slant on it, the SPFL have reportedly been told that St Johnstone's home game against Aberdeen on Sunday will not be affected by this. And also the chat is that the home game for Aberdeen against Hamilton Accies a week today, next Wednesday, that is, will also be unaffected. Is this just something that you think we're going to have to get used to, KC, over the next kind of season or so before a vaccine is hopefully found?
Unfortunately, yes. I think that it's just reiterating and reminding us that it's still no anywhere near away yet, unfortunately. And we're not quite out of the woods and quite away from that, to be honest. Obviously, it's big positive having the football back, but as you said, this is just something that we are going to have to get used to. But you just hope that, it's only this kind of setback, and fingers crossed it gets contained again and we can continue to progress. But it's certainly a massive concern, absolutely no doubt about it. Considering all the kind of good news that has come out recently, and you're thinking, oh, it's a football back, oh, that means hopefully we'll be back in grounds by September, but stuff last coming out makes you doubt that again. I just think that it's just another reminder that everybody's got to be vigilant with it, and as I said, I not obviously dwell too much on the cause of it, but you did see pictures of like the pubs in Aberdeen and stuff, and to be fair, it just didn't really look like they were, you know, carrying out any of the guidelines. Yeah. But that's no, a lot of people blame the punters for that, but for me it's got the responsibility lies with the owners of the pubs there, and hopefully this kind of gives everybody a wee bit of a kick up the arse and, you know, starting to kind of take it a wee bit serious.
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of what you said there. Moving on, interesting news, anyone that saw earlier on today, that Bayern Munich have offered Aaron Hickey a VIP tour of their facilities. He is expected to take up that offer. Obviously, that's with a view to the German side signing him. He's also got Serie A Bologna who want him. I've read some comments from their recruitment director who was effectively hinting that they're going to sign him if you read between the lines of what he had to say. Obviously, Celtic have been linked with him as well. An English team as well that I can't quite remember.
Villa, I think it is.
Villa, yeah, I think that was it. So he's got plenty of interest. How good do we think Hickey is, Casey? Because, you know, he was in a Hearts team that was relegated last year. He was probably the bright spark for that Hearts team, but I don't want to do down a young Scottish talent, but is there a danger that when a team like Bayern Munich's in for him that he's a little bit overhyped, or have they seen something we perhaps haven't?
I think that they're seeing something that I haven't, certainly. And as I said, I'm not wanting to, you know, put the boot in on the boy, because obviously you're wanting everybody to be successful coming throughout Scotland, because it's only obviously good for the game itself and for the national team. But obviously I need to keep reminding myself that he's only just turned 18, to be fair to him, and he's played a lot of football, which is only a positive and means he can only get better. But I just think that any time I've seen him, he's not really impressed me. And I know when you're consistently watching players that you're not convinced of, you almost latch onto the idea that they're no good because you're waiting on them making a mistake, and you probably pick up their mistakes more than anything. But it doesn't really do it for me. But you talk to the Hearts fans and they see him a lot more than I do, and by all accounts that was the kind of only positive last season, to be fair. So I would obviously trust a jumbo season ticket holder more than what I've got to say about Hickey. But no, I think it is a strange one, but what I'll say is, fair play to him if he goes abroad. Obviously, you'd be daft to turn down Bayern Munich, but obviously Bologna have been interested and stuff. And fair play to him. Obviously, we desperately wanted it to work out for like the likes of Ryan Gold, and unfortunately, it's not really worked out for him. So you're hoping if a young player goes abroad, it takes a lot of guts to do that. And going to one of the clubs will only progress him as a footballer. Again, having said that, though, I feel that for him to continue and for him to get better, because I don't think he's anywhere near the finished article. Of course, he wouldn't be 18 years old, but he has to play week in, week out. And obviously, he's not got to go to Bayern Munich and play week in, week out, and play Bologna week in, week out. So it's one of them, with a stint in the Bayern reserves, be better for him with the coaching standards and the training facilities and playing week in, week out over here. I don't know. Obviously, interesting to see Celtic had been in for him a good few times as well that had been knocked back. So no, I mean, it's a tough one. It'd be hard to turn down a massive European club like Bayern Munich, and if he goes there, I wish him all the best and hope he progresses as a player. But equally, I think that he's got a lot to improve on, and I think you can only get rid of that by playing games.
Yeah, obviously for the national team, it'd be really good as well, because we're really crying out for a left back, aren't we? At the moment.
Just to jump in on that, just on Hickey going to Bayern. Obviously, he's. I mean, you look the last couple of years, I mean, Sancho's the big one, but you've got a good few British players that have gone over there.
Well, the one I wanted to mention, Liam Morrison for Celtic last season.
Yeah, obviously he came across from Celtic, but you look at, obviously, Ethan Ampadu at Leipzig, kind of Rabbi Matondo, John Joe Kenny, guys like that, younger kind of British players. Obviously, they've still came from a higher level than Hearts, and I think that I doubt we'd be seeing Aaron Hickey anytime soon in the Bundesliga, but he must look at that and think, you know, these guys have gone, they've developed, and now they're starting regularly in the Bundesliga with the greatest will in the world to Hearts in the Championship. I mean, even the level, obviously, Casey mentioned the reserves there. If he does play for Bayern Munich's reserve team, they're still in the kind of third division, the three Liga in Germany. So he might look at that and go, well, I can go there, I can develop, I can play with, you know, even at youth level, some of the best players in the world, and I can bring my game on. And obviously, I think all professional football players have got to have a bit of ego, and you'd have to think that a guy that's you know, not just about to turn 18, as you mentioned, has got to think, well, if I'm good enough to break through into a team in Hearts, if I go to Germany, work on my game, surrounded by, you know, top coaches, top players, in Germany, then he must think, well, I could possibly do that as well. I mean, even from Bayern Munich's point of view, Alphonso Davies is in the team just now. They brought him across from Vancouver Whitecaps, and he's, you know, he's played about 35 games for them, and he's not even 20 yet. So, I mean, the opportunity is there. I think for Hickey's point of view, to go and develop, I mean, if I were ever lucky enough to be a professional footballer, I mean, I'd have been jumping at the chance to go and play in Germany, to be honest. But it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, Aaron Hickey, very much one for the future Hearts player. Another Hearts player who's very much one of the past, or certainly so you would think, is Christoph Berra. Reading some interesting quotes from him that apparently he thinks he can make an impression at Hearts this year. Obviously back at the club after Daniel Stendel axed him in January, Berra says he understood, you know, that Stendel was the one who could make that decision, and he respected it, but that he didn't necessarily agree with it. And Berra now quoted as saying that he wants to make an impact this season, which seems a bit strange because his Hearts career seemed pretty much over. But obviously in the Championship, he'll maybe be able to do quite well there. It sounded like he did quite well in Dundee loan spell as well. I think he played 6 games and kept 5 clean sheets in that time. So yeah, future for him possibly at Hearts. Hearts also wanting Elliot Freer, the former Motherwell winger, while also in the Championship, Dundee have signed Danny Mullen on a 2-year deal. He's obviously ex-St Mirren. So Championship, it goes without saying that we'll cover that extensively during the season once their campaign eventually gets underway in mid-October, I think. So still a couple of months to go there, but lots to get excited about in the Championship, League One and League Two. Just finally, in the news front, guys, Lewis McLeod reportedly wants to come back to Scotland, or at least says that he would be open to the idea of coming back to Scotland. Would that be a good signing for, you know, a Hibs, a Hearts, or an Aberdeen, Casey?
I think so. I think he's obviously Fisher is obviously seen in the flesh a lot more than me, and would have kind of probably studied his development south of the border more so than myself. But no, he's somebody I've obviously tried to keep an eye on in his time at Rangers. Remember, I've been technically very, very good. A couple of bicycle kicks thrown in there with his goals, I think, at Somerset and stuff. But I think that he would be like tailor-made for like the likes of Hibs, but I think they've already got too many players of that ilk now. We obviously...
Yeah, Scott Marlon, Allen,
exactly. So I think that it's one of those, and I'm not what I put the boot into Aberdeen, but ideally, he looks like he'd fit the bill there, and obviously players like Christie and stuff have flourished up there, but McInnes at times, tactically, doesn't really get the best out of these technical players. You look at Greg Stewart's kind of hindrance at Pittodrie, when he's unbelievable, you know, with the ball at his feet. Unfortunately, there's a lot of kind of maybe a lot more direct football being played there, which sometimes doesn't suit guys like him. I would like to think that he would want to play in the Premiership. Of course, Hearts are a massive club and bigger than the vast majority in the current Premiership. So I would like to think that even the likes of ourselves or whatever could be in for him. Because he would totally change the kind of dynamic of the way we played. But having said that, I don't think we could afford him. Maybe one Dundee United could be interested in as well to kind of to kick them onto the next level. So no, I'd be glad to see him up here. Very good age, 26 I think it is, and he has played a lot of football, to be fair. And I think he's done well in the Championship down in England, so I reckon he's developed as a player as well. So no, I look forward to seeing him back up here.
Yeah, it'd be good to see him at a decent sized club in the Premiership, but I think him playing in the top flight in general would be quite good. Just interesting when you're talking about Aberdeen there and a lack of creativity, and I do agree in comparison to teams like Hibs, but it's strange because they've got players there. I mean, I noticed on Saturday that Dylan McGeer, who I think is a great player, and Jack Ross clearly liked enough to sign for League One promotion chasing Sunderland not so long ago, and McGeer was on the bench on Saturday and I don't think he got on at all. So yeah, strange at Aberdeen, big questions over them, and they're the first game we're going to just briefly touch on. They open the weekend on Saturday, 12:30 kickoff. That game live in Sky Sports away to St Johnstone. Also on Saturdays, Hamilton versus Ross County, Livingston Hibs and Motherwell versus Dundee United. Some really good fixtures there on Saturday. Sunday, 3:00, Rangers versus St Mirren. That game taking place because of Rangers' European exertions on Thursday night. And then to finish off the weekend, we have Kilmarnock against Celtic, 4:30 kickoff, and again live on Sky Sports. It's another interesting weekend. Casey, other than the obvious, what one sticks out for you out of those fixtures?
I'd say that Motherwell and Dundee United is quite an interesting one, and it'll give a good indication of what level both clubs are at. Obviously Motherwell could beat the County the other night.
They're poor.
I thought they were poor, but on a separate note altogether with that, Hamish, obviously I made the point on Sunday that I was kind of worried for the kind of lack of chances been created in certain games, particularly our own, in the Rangers-Aberdeen. Thought the Motherwell County game was absolutely brilliant. Like, it was end to end, and there was a lot of action, so that's given me a bit of hope that we're not quite going down the road of England yet with that, with the lack of supporters on the ground, which I think makes an influence in the way teams play. But no, I think Motherwell United sticks out. It really does. It tests to see what level both clubs are at. Realistically, Motherwell should be fancying their chances being at home and obviously against the newly promoted side, and it's a good chance to see how good Dundee United actually are, whether they're still the championship team or the Premiership club that the United are.
Yeah, it'll be good. I like Livingston Hibs as well on Saturday. That's obviously a relatively local game, and in a normal world Hibs would have a pretty decent support over at Ammanvale. Obviously that won't be the case on Saturday, but still an interesting game. Livingston will be looking for a reaction after their result on Saturday, and Hibs obviously looking to back up their start to the season, so looking forward to that one. Hamilton Ross County, a bit of a battle at the bottom as well. I don't want to put too much pressure in that game, but when you see Ross County and St Mirren already winning on the opening game of the season, perhaps surprisingly, you maybe feel that Hamilton have got to get a result there. So I think that one will be interesting. And then on Sunday, Fisher, two big games.
Yeah, I think obviously the Rangers against St Mirren, you'd be looking at Rangers taking all 3 points there and trying to do it in comfortable style, because immediately if Rangers maybe don't win that game, say 2 or 3 or by 2 or 3, then people start going, well, Celtic could put away Hamilton convincingly in the first day of the season, and the same questions start getting asked the Rangers about being able to dispatch teams at home who kind of sit behind the ball and try and make it tricky. But I mean, St Mirren, from what I saw last week, whilst Livingston still probably should have got something out of that game, St Mirren did look good, and we have talked them up in the podcast, so interesting to see what they're like when they come to Ibrox. And obviously Kilmarnock under Steve Clark made it really difficult for the Old Firm coming to Rugby Park, and it'd be interesting to, because I think Hamilton did certainly cause Celtic a few problems in those first 20-25 minutes. So if Kilmarnock can kind of rediscover some of what they made so some of what made them so hard to beat at Rugby Park against the Old Firm, then that should be a good one as well.
Right, just moving on briefly before we chat to Martin. Burstball Fantasy Football, top of the league after week one. Well done, Craig Forrester. I don't know if he happens to be a listener of the podcast or whether he's just one of those guys that joined the league, but he got 107 points, guys. That's unbelievable.
Did they have his triple captain on?
He did, and he had it on the main man. Edward netted him 48. Alan McGregor got him 12. He had Richard Tate in his team as well, who got him 12. And he also had his bench boost on as well. And he had Shaughnessy on the bench from St Mirren. So he's walked away with 107 points there. And yeah, pretty good start for him. How did you guys get on in general, all right?
I'd get on no too bad. Obviously, I'm in a couple of private leagues as well with my mates, and I'm kind of sitting, and obviously we've got our own kind of private one as well, so I'm kind of sitting in the top four and five. And
you're not meant to tell folk about that.
Aye, well, that's for the, obviously only the creators of the podcast, you know, for a wee bit of interest there, so apologies for letting that secret out of the bag, but I'm sitting fairly comfortable. Decent week. As I said, obviously the Kamarnock players didn't do me any favours in Saturday, so and I'm not holding out much hope for this Sunday against Celtic either, but thankfully, obviously, I think I've got McGregor, Julian and Edward in my team, so, and that's no me throwing Kelly under the bus here either.
How many points did you get, Fisher?
I got a measly 36, which I actually thought was all right until you started talking about that guy that's got 100,000 points or whatever. Yeah, a bit of a slow start for me, but I've made a few adjustments, so I'm confident that there's going to be a bit of a bounce back next week.
Definitely. Are you doing fantasy league this year, Martin?
No, I'm taking a year off. I did it last year.
Very nice. Well, welcome Martin Ross to the show. He's the global news editor at Sport Business, and he's a big Scottish football fan as well. So you'll get on well with us, Martin. It's good to have you on. I'll start just by asking you just your thoughts on the overall state of Scottish football at present and how attractive you think it is to television broadcasters.
Yeah, sure. No, thanks for having me on. I mean, I need to put it into, I suppose, the context of where we are at the moment. I mean, there's the COVID world, and then there's the normal circumstances under which the league operates. I mean, as we stand at the moment, there's actually a nice little window for the SPFL to get some decent exposure over the coming weeks with, you know, Premier League, EFL and all the four other big European leagues having their break in between seasons. Mm-hmm. So there's an exposure window there domestically for, you know, the audiences on Sky and also internationally, although unfortunately it's not quite all that easy because coupled with that, you have pretty much every paid TV broadcaster you can think of in the world on their knees or close to on their knees in terms of budget. Yeah. So not a very good time to be going to market.
Yeah, that's really interesting. In terms of, you know, the current Sky deal, I think it's 54 games per season. So you've got the normal 48 and then six Premiership playoff matches included in that as well. I think I'm right in saying it's worth 160 million over 5 years. Is that good value for our game, Martin?
Yeah, it's worth, well, that value there also brings in the other elements of Premier Sports and BBC Scotland, I think. So I think it's worth about 26 million a year in terms of just Sky.
So is that including the cups as well, that figure?
That's just what Sky will be paying for the league, and then Premier Sports pays a sum for the Betfred Cup.
Right, okay.
And then BBC pay for the highlights, and BBC Alba, of course, you know, for their delayed coverage as well. So that's the figure for Sky, which was a decent uplift on what they had before. And to be honest, I think it was undervalued before, and I think it's now up at a level that's a bit closer to where it should be. And I think they did a decent enough deal last time. And certainly, I'm sure if you ask Neil Doncaster, he wouldn't want to be trying to negotiate a new deal right now.
Yeah. In terms of broadcasting in overseas territories, we certainly came across an interesting Twitter feed. I don't know if you saw it, Martin, last week from a fella that was effectively saying that perhaps Scottish football isn't doing enough to you know, be seen in other countries. Perhaps it isn't cashing in on having big name players from other countries. I'm thinking of the likes of Morelos in Colombia, Tom Rogic and Martin Boyle in Australia, and even the Japanese player Ryotaro Mishina, who was at Hearts last season. Do you think we could be doing more to have our game showcased across the world? Or, from your information, is Scottish football trying hard?
Scottish football is trying hard, and their agency, which is in front, which is at the start of a new cycle, is trying hard. Again, you really have to sort of take a step back and say, look where we are now and look where we are normally. If we were up and firing normally and we had lots of star players, I mean, again, we're talking about players now that aren't, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura from at that time, he was bringing in £1.5 million a year, a Japanese TV deal, just because he was a complete global superstar. Whereas now we're talking about players that aren't quite so, you know, they're not in that league. Where we are right now, we've kicked off this new season without deals in certain countries. You know, there's no US deal, there's no French deal, there's no Canada deal, and there's no deal in the Middle East or a deal in Germany, which is very unusual. And the reason for that is just where the broadcasters are right now. They've had their rights budgets completely decimated. You talk about Morelos in Latin America. The Latin American broadcasters right now can't even get commentators for the games because they've all been furloughed. So we are not in a position at the moment to judge how well the game is sold, because it's the start of a new cycle. You've got an agency that's come in that's got a five-year deal to sell it, and the 6 months that they've had where they would be selling has been completely disrupted by COVID. As you know, you can imagine, the subscribers to all sorts of different broadcasters worldwide have been leaving in the droves. So, but generally speaking, you know, last season was 130 countries, I think, that the league was being broadcast in, which is decent. The money they get in for their international rights is, you know, tiny compared to England, as you would expect. We're talking about probably just about £1.8 million a year, including the betting rights as well abroad. So it's tiny money compared to big leagues, but it's not fair to make that comparison. The one big thing I would say, actually, in terms of when we're talking about international, I don't know if you've been talking about club TV channels, but what they do internationally, it's very, very unusual for a league to allow its clubs to show their games internationally live and then try and sell the same games to broadcast as well, if you know what I mean. Say, at the moment, you know, you watch Celtic TV or Rangers TV, if you're outside UK and Ireland, you could watch any single game you wanted live, including the games that we're trying to sell again live around the world. So you have broadcasters looking at that going, you know, this is, why should I buy Scottish football when fans around the world can already go to the websites of their clubs and watch it, albeit for a fee? So that, I spoke to Eurosport a few years ago. They were really keen on doing a deal for Scottish football around large parts of Europe, but that was one thing that put them off. They said, you know, this is unusual. And in order for that to be changed, you would need the clubs, and I really mean Celtic and Rangers, really, to look at it and to say, look, we're willing to forgo a couple of £100,000 that they get from that to look at the bigger picture and to, you know, create a better package for Scottish football. And that's not the SPFL as an organisation's fault. That's just the sort of hand they've been dealt with the clubs.
Yeah, it's quite interesting stuff, Fisher.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's certainly one thing for the overseas fans that you just touched on that I did think of. If, you know, as Martin mentioned there, trying to sell an international TV deal to countries whereby you do have a lot of expats, I'm thinking maybe like Australia, United States and things like that. So if you, I can imagine that that would be tough to sell a deal to these countries when a lot of supporters, and I mean, as a Rangers fan, I know it myself, you go in the forums and you get guys from America, Australia, all talking about, you know, like the Rangers TV coverage, and I'm sure it's the same with Celtic and other clubs as well. So certainly I can see why that would be a major stumbling block for the SPFL.
Martin, I'll ask you what you thought of the whole PPV thing, obviously pay-per-view, that's come about because of the current situation. Some clubs charging more than others. I think we had Motherwell down at £12. I think I'm right in saying Rangers are maybe doing it for £9.99. Was that announced today?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And Livingston, I think, are the highest at £20. But you've also got some clubs who possibly aren't even going to do it at all. We covered the fact that Hibs versus Kilmarnock wasn't available to non-season ticket holders at the weekend, much to the disgust of Callum Scott, who's on the panel tonight. And, I don't think Celtic are going to do it, although they're still to really make a decision over that. What have you made of this whole thing, Martin?
Yeah, that was my understanding as well. And I believe Celtic don't have plans to do it. I mean, these things can change quite quickly. And the reason Hibs haven't done it is they've looked at their sort of list of games coming up, and most of them are on Sky for the next couple of months. So there hasn't been the same pressure to do so. It's a bit of a mess, but we've inherited a set of conditions that is, you know, unprecedented and really difficult to work through. I can see why fans would be put out by clubs starting to replicate maybe their kind of home ticketing strategy and charging, as Livingston have done, a really effectively a high price for these games for pay-per-view. But you've kind of got no other option, because it's not really a pay-per-view cost only. It's a pseudo kind of season ticket being there in being there as a in-person price, because what they've done initially is gone to the season ticket holders and charge them a full season ticket price to watch, who knows, half the season online, who knows, maybe mm-hmm. the full season. So it's really hard to look at that and say it's just a pay-per-view under normal conditions price. I think it's been handled a bit, smartly in one way by the clubs, in that they always had plans, most of them, to do pay-per-view, but were never going to communicate that until they had sold their season tickets, or virtual season tickets, however you want to describe them. So it's a bit messy what we've got, I think, with so many different price points for essentially similar products. It is a bit messy, but you can see how we've got here because of the circumstances we've kind of been left with. And I think clubs have just been trying to work through what they can and pick the best option for them. I feel sorry for away fans that can't watch certain games who would have physically perhaps been at these games. I suppose we are where we are, and there will be a whole load more games available to watch this season than there would have been last season, albeit, of course, you're not going to be physically at the game. So.
Yeah, you certainly fell into that category on Saturday, KC.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it was a frustration. I know plenty of people who were able to access the game either through a Hibs season ticket that somebody had obviously generously donated to them. I actually know somebody who purchased the Hibs season ticket and watched the game, believe it or not. So, wow. That's extreme to the max. And then obviously there's other people who, as we kind of spoke about, that had obviously got it through the means of illegal streaming or whatever, which, again, I just need to keep going back onto. I mean, obviously, I don't know whether Martin would be able to explain it more clearly than myself, but I can't understand why, if they're streaming the game anyway to season ticket holders, that they can't just make it eligible for people to... Like, they're already broadcasting it anyway, so why would it be so hard for somebody to sign up for one... a one-day pass or whatever on these streaming sites? And it's disappointing to hear that Celtic are looking to carry out the same approach, and fair play to Rangers for putting it forward and being as cheap as £9.99 as well. As I said, I was pretty surprised with that, but I'm glad to hear it. It's just more that the away supporters that would be missing out, and as we spoke about before, the fans who can't afford a season ticket just now, it's just an entirely frustrating process. But I'm glad to see that, I'd say, the vast majority of the clubs in the league are kind of playing ball with it, so to speak, and you shouldn't miss out on too many games, thankfully.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, all these games are being sort of produced and broadcast live somewhere, so they are available somewhere. When the in front of the agency that sells the rights, what they do is they try and get the broadcasters to show every single game. So, you know, you'll be able to pick up in some language, I'm sure, a stream of it somehow. And I'd love to know as well what the clubs have done about sort of protecting the unique code, supposedly, that each season ticket holder has. I don't know how robust that system is. If you're able to, two or three people can log in at the same time, I'm not sure is the answer to that one, I suppose. Whether you can pass, you know, hand around your login or not. They've told people not to do it, but I don't know if it works or not. I suppose it will depend club to club.
Yeah, and obviously at the moment, through lockdown, everyone's become quite familiar with Zoom and how easy screen sharing is on Zoom. So you wonder how they're safeguarding against stuff like that as well. Yeah, we'll move on for the pay-per-view stuff. Just a kind of interesting topic that we like to touch on quite regularly on the podcast with regards to SPFL TV. Now, we almost, you know, in many ways we made up the phrase, obviously, in years gone by, it's been SPL TV that was first pioneered, I think, by Roger Mitchell way back in the early 21st century. Do we think something like this could work, Martin? Obviously, there'll be loads of different things that are probably prohibiting it at the moment, certain laws maybe that are in place, the fact Sky have such a big role in Scottish football in the moment as the main broadcasters and the only broadcasters of league football. But could, you know, a pay-per-view television where fans paid money per month, could that work, and could it make Scottish football teams more money than the current Sky deal?
Well, I think we'd need a separate podcast just to discuss that on its own. You might want to get Roger on it as well, because I think he's still talking about it, and he still thinks it's a goer. I think it's really interesting. I mean, of course, you could do it. You could do it from 2025 when the Sky deal's finished, but it's a big risk. You need, at the moment, in all sorts of different sort of sports leagues, Serie A being one, there's a lot of investment into the leagues by private equity or so, and you would need somebody like that to come in, or a broadcaster to come in and say, look, we're going to underwrite this so that the clubs know that they're going to get a certain amount of money through doing it. What you wouldn't want to do is just, you know, have a go at it and have your projections, but not really, you would have to wait and see how much you're going to get through each year. And the bit that everybody always seems to forget is, if you're not going to get somebody to underwrite it, there's the costs associated with it, you know, the marketing costs of it, building production. Up a relationship with customers, production, you know, talent, you would get, whether they would get Daryl and Chris Sutton and his crew involved, I don't know. But, you know, these guys aren't going to be particularly cheap. You've got to then, either you just go fully, they call it over the top, which means, you know, just go out with apps and online as a digital proposition, or for older people watching, they would want to be able to watch it on Sky, on BT TV, on, you know, whichever, however they watch their TV. These deals have to be done. It's not easy. I would say it would only be a goer if you could get somebody to come in and back it. The Dutch league do it, and it's always the one that people reference, but they do that, but they got a broadcaster to come in, which was Fox, which pays them 80 million euros a year. And they got a 49% stake in that, in the company that does the broadcast of the league in a sort of in-house way. So it's always held up as the sort of the solution. I'm pretty skeptical myself. I mean, how many leagues do it domestically around the world? Hardly any. Lots of them do it as a way of topping up sort of their international exposure and you know, for where they don't have TV deals, but not many of them do it as their domestic deal. They all fall back on a domestic TV deal. So sorry to be cynical, but I'm yet to be convinced of it, I must say.
Yeah, interesting to get your viewpoint on that anyway, because it's something we've mentioned a lot in the podcast basically since we started way back in, you know, 2015 or whenever it was. You're obviously a football fan as well, and I was just interested to get your point of view on, you know, the opening weekend's coverage of football in Scotland this season. We've had Sky Sports taking sole rights, having three games live in the opening weekend. We've also had Sportscene getting their Saturday night highlights back on. What was your overall thoughts on how the weekend panned out?
Yeah, I thought it went well. I enjoyed the Sky coverage. I think Darren Fletcher's a good addition. I mean, the sort of Commons out and Fletcher in has been sort of quite a successful sub, I would suggest, for them.
I think so.
Sky's coverage of games is not quite as incisive as that. I'm sure you've spoken at length maybe about the BT coverage in past years, which has been really successful. It's maybe not quite as popular as that, but the production is decent. Where they let themselves down is maybe all the sort of mistakes they make on Sky Sports News around logos and the product and mistakes they make about names and so on. But I thought it was it was good. They dedicated a good amount of time to it. As was Sports Scene. There were a few hiccups with some of the, I suppose, the coverage with each of the clubs online coverage, but that's bound to happen, I suppose, in what we've had. I think Sky need to perhaps up their game editorially, you know, and stop, sort of cut out some of the errors that they make in promoting and marketing Scottish football. But in terms of the production of the games, it's good. What I would like to know myself is whether they will be getting extra games this season. I know the SPFL have denied that, but certainly the compensation deal that was struck with Sky was extremely low compared to compensation deals that they've struck with other leagues, which would make me think that Sky would perhaps end up having more than 48 games this season, but it has been denied so far.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that stuck out to me as well. I was looking at the amount of games in the opening, you know, I think it's the 4 or 5 match days that they've announced the TV dates and times for. And Sky have got, you know, they obviously had 3 games on in the opening weekend. They've got 2 in midweek in a week's time. And those 48 games are going to run out quite quickly. I get that they're probably trying to get more in at the moment while there's no English football on. But I think you might be right that they might get more down the line. Just finally, when we mention English football there, I'm not going to go into comments made by a certain former Spurs and Wolves midfielder, but it's fair to say that it got a lot of people talking earlier. I'll get Fisher's thoughts on this first. Do you, in terms of, obviously we're talking about everything here, but in terms of like TV rights and stuff like that, do you think we compare ourselves to England too much, Fisher?
I think we all had a bit of a back and forth in our group chat earlier regarding this. I think we probably do, and I think it's only natural because, to be fair, it is, you know, they are our neighbours, if you like, and you look at, certainly from a Scottish point of view, just on our top two teams, I mean, Rangers and Celtic, in terms of stature, can compete with pretty much any team down there, apart from probably Man United and Liverpool. From that, if you're just talking about kind of history and things like that. And then I think you see, obviously, I mean, even in Scotland, like the Premier League is still everywhere, whether it be like you see kids wearing, you know, Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea tops. It's constantly advertised, even through Scottish football games, whether that be Sky or previously BT. You've obviously get Match of the Day showing up here and stuff as well. So I think it's only natural. It certainly doesn't do us any favours because, obviously, although Scottish football, as we've discussed, has plenty of faults, it also has plenty of positives. And I think sometimes we can get dragged down in trying to not compete, because I don't think anybody realistically thinks we can with just how big English football is, but I think sometimes we maybe do get dragged down and kind of looking at what's, you know, down the road and kind of maybe just not realising that what we do actually have up here, while it's not perfect, it does have a lot of positive points.
Definitely. Do you go along with that, Martin?
Yeah, from a sporting point of view, absolutely. I think it doesn't. I don't think it does us any harm to remind our friends down south about how big clubs, the Celtic, Rangers, you know, Aberdeen, Dundee United, for example, as well, are, and the history that they've had in the game. So I think we should certainly differentiate the sort of big club argument versus the commercial argument. It doesn't, from a commercial point of view, it does us no favours at all to be comparing sort of our TV deal with theirs. It makes far more sense to, you know, pick a country of a similar kind of population and similar number of people watching TV, pay TV subscribers and so on. You know, you look at Switzerland as a good example of somewhere that's along the lines of where we are population-wise and sort of market dynamics. To start comparing TV deals and, for that matter, actually sponsorship deals with what Premier League teams get, I think, is a kind of pointless argument, because it's certainly not one that you're ever going to win.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. It's been great having you on, Martin. Really good to get your insight on these kind of things. Personally, I find it quite fascinating.
No problem at all. No problem at all. Good to chat.
No problem. Right, I think that's us at the end of the show, guys. Just finally, Casey, are you going to find a way to sneak into Rugby Park on Sunday?
Well, I'll do my best. I've got a few pals that stay basically right in the doorstep of Rugby Park, but no, I think I'll be watching it with one of my mates in their houses, pending that Kilmarnock doesn't go into lockdown over the weekend, or I'll watch it at the pub. So thankfully it's on Sky Sports, and I've got my season ticket, so even if it wasn't, I would be able to watch the home matches anyway.
See if you can borrow a cherry picker.
Aye, I could get on the phone and out to see about inquiring about that. So, aye, was it the Aberdeen game? Did somebody have that, or was it another game?
I think it was Aberdeen.
Aye, two
Rangers. Aye.
Yeah, two boys had a cherry picking at Pittodrie. Yeah.
Aye, so right. Even at Rugby Park, I've noticed that, because obviously when you cut through the fences, you used to be able to kind of peek in to see the players training, but even those holes have been all kind of patched up and stuff as well, so no, I don't think that there's any way to watch it live within the grounds of the stadium.
Well, great stuff. Enjoy the game anyway. Thanks very much to the two Callums for joining me, and to Martin Ross as well for joining us. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to the show, and hopefully we'll speak to you very soon.